You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Well, draft day is finally here. It is Thursday, April 26th, and we get it kicked off tonight, not a moment too soon. We're going to take you through some of the latest news and information that's going on around the league. Tell you not all of what I hear. That would take too long. And a lot of what you hear has to be sorted through, vetted, and sanitized a little bit. And I'll provide some things that I know to be accurate from firsthand involvement, and we'll go from there and do our best to kind of give you a feel for how things could play out. We're also going to spend some time going to try to answer a couple of good questions that were brought in, as well as take you inside the draft room. What happens on draft day? It might surprise you a little bit as how things go on. But it is. I can tell you that it is a very hectic time right now around the league. Teams are obviously doing their due diligence, making their phone calls, trying to get information, trying to figure out the options and who might be there, who might not, how this may all play out. So that's been a hectic part, as I mentioned on Tuesday. You know, it's really not the I wouldn't classify it as fun. It's a little bit nerve-wracking, a little bit hectic, a little bit trying to find out information. And the hay's in the barn. You know, you've done your work. And if you're evaluating players at this point, you've really done a poor job. The only thing you worry about, and I get asked this, is something that you didn't know about or didn't get enough clarity on medically or character-wise. So that is something you want to make sure, you know, double-check anything we're missing. So you're going over last-minute details with your security guy and making sure that you've got everything cleaned out. And you want to do that, and that is what you have done certainly last night prior to the draft, and make sure that nothing else has come up on the radar screen, you know, that you have a situation, quite frankly. I hate to bring it up, but you don't have a Len Bias type situation. You remember tragically he died after he was drafted, but, you know, you wonder sometimes. I think kids today pretty much know what's going on and how they need to be. They're always in the public eye, and that they need to make good decisions, but some of them don't. So you want to make sure that you don't have a situation that arises last minute. Quick reminder for all the latest information on the draft today. Follow me on Twitter at Landry Football. I'll be on for a couple of hours at least, time permitting, with NBC Sports Radio. So you can log on to NBC Sports Radio and listen online, or your NBC affiliate nationally, and I'll be analyzing the draft for those guys at least a couple of hours. I will get on as soon as I can with them with some of my league work. So we will certainly be able to talk you through all the picks as they happen. But we're also going to have some great information for you on Twitter, analyzing the picks as they're made, giving you some snippets of what these players are like. So you really want to log on to Twitter, follow us, I should say, at Landry Football. All the information, we've re-updated, reposted our draft boards and scouting reports on players, so you know what you need to know about these players as your team gets ready to draft them. I tell you, focus on the knowledge of the players, not somebody's mock draft. That, if you want to be educated, it's the first step towards doing it. So I want to get inside the draft room on draft day. It certainly changed over the years. When I first started as a scout, we had 12-round drafts, and the draft was on a Tuesday. And it started you know, like 7 a.m. And, folks, they didn't have, obviously, you didn't have social media. Draft, quite frankly, wasn't even on TV. I think it maybe a couple of years later it got on TV. And so people started to follow it a little bit then, but it wasn't like it is today. People, you know, like, kind of heard there might be a draft. They read about it in the papers. You didn't have, again, internet, and you didn't have talk shows, and it just was a different world. You could basically remain anonymous, do your job, draft pick players, and you figure out later, you know, what happened. It's completely different today, obviously. There's a lot of fanfare, a lot of, you know, a lot of histrionics, a lot of flash and dash to try to sell you into thinking things and believing things, and again, from people that really have no background in the business and the world, like it has in the rest of the world, has become more look at me oriented, more about marketing and less about substance, and that's what you got today. We've got tons of information, as we've talked about that before, but it's created in a lot of ways a lot of misinformation, and then what you do is, but you have is a lot of excitement. I think the league's done a fantastic job of marketing it. People are excited. I want you to be excited about the draft, but I want you to understand what the draft is, okay? And understand it's not like your fantasy football draft, and it is not about just, I want my guy to take this guy or that guy. Learn more about these players. Learn how to look at players and understand how teams see these players fit and make that determination. And again, please don't evaluate based upon what a mock draft says that is put together by people that are not knowledgeable football people. They're reporters. They don't work in football. And they're gathering that information from people in the league that are purposely telling them certain things as opposed to telling them what's really going on. So, it used to be that 12 days – and I'm going to tell you, it started at like 7 and it ended like 2 a.m. the next morning. It was a grind. And it ever since it went to like 93 or 4, we went to 8 rounds. And then we went to 7 in the format that we have today. But then we switched it. When we went to 7, it went to a Saturday draft. And then, you know, we had the Saturday and Sunday, and it was a weekend event, and it started on Saturday morning, and it ended on Sunday afternoon, and that was kind of how it played out. Well, as you obviously know, the draft has changed, and they've gone prime time and it made it the first round on Thursday night and the second round on Friday, and you just so on and so forth. Well, what it's done is kind of created a little bit of a different strategical approach, because instead of just going from the 32nd pick to the 33rd pick, you shut it down and you've got several hours to recalibrate your board in terms of looking at the possibilities of doing trades. You get more time to talk to people and facilitate a trade, the greater chances that you have trades. So that is what's changed strategically about it. Drawing the draft out. But what probably is a little bit surprising or disappointing to you is what really goes on draft day. The hay's in the barn for the most part. The evaluation has been done. The preparation of scenarios that you go through have been done. What you really need to do is kind of let the draft come to you a little bit. If you're picking high, you're on the clock quicker. So you're a little bit more on edge. So if you're just picking fifth, for example, you don't have a lot of options in front of you. So you have a pretty good idea who's going to be there. And you will field a little more calls leading up to the draft because, again, you know, people, there are less variables, so you have more time to be able to get things done. And you pretty much kind of know where things will be. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if a team like Denver and Buffalo try to get a trade done contingent upon the player being there, and that could be the framework of that being done prior to the draft. Now, whether it ever comes off or not will depend upon any last-minute snags or any last-minute additions to what you're going to offer, or more importantly, whether a player is going to be there. Every team in this draft room has a vertical board, which is a position draft board, then a horizontal draft board. You've heard me use those terms. That's the best overall players. And their players are ranked from top overall to the priority free agent. On another wall is what we call a reject board, where all the players that have been evaluated but deemed not being able to help the club are on that board. NFL teams should be able to go through the entire draft with their top 150 players and even less. Your cutoff grade, I've always cut it off at 5-5 grades. That's all we need, and you should be able to run your draft through that. On another wall is each NFL team's depth chart board with spots to add players that they acquire through the draft. This helps to anticipate other teams' moves in the draft and helps with your own draft strategy. And prior to the draft getting started, everybody looks at the draft trade chart, not the ones that you read on the internet, but the ones that you make based upon how the draft cutoff and the value point cutoff relative to your grade. So, again, if you see two guys at the top tier, those first two picks have a little more higher value than normal, and then there's maybe a little bit more of a drop-off to three, and then not as much to four. Another big drop-off from four to five, but, let's say 5 to 18 are virtually the same. I mean, very, very close in terms of numbers, So there'll be differences in terms of point value, but not nearly the gap as some of the other spots. So you go through that over again, and you go through different scenarios, and you plot out some of the what-ifs. Hey, all right, so what do we do if this or that happens? And you got to prepare for it. You take some of those calls, and then listen, the draft starts. I always handle our trade charts. I always handled, how are we going to go about, setting it. So what I did is I had a form that I use, and literally when I got a call, I wrote down the offer, and, clearly we had exactly, and it's not, well, we're a fourth-round pick. We want your fourth-round pick. It has to be the number. So, it's important. The point, you've got the board where literally you've got all the picks or all the draft slotting positions so that, if Seattle calls you and, the fourth-round pick, you look and see. They might have multiple fourth-round picks. Well, which one are you talking about? You're talking about, what pick, what number. So you make sure you get that squared away, and that helps you to assimilate point values based on this current year's draft charts. Things are very slow on draft day. It's a lot of nervous energy, a lot of nervous eating. It's a slow process the further down you're picking, the further where you are. Now, if you're, again, trying to move up, well, then it becomes very aggressive because you're trying to initiate some conversations and getting into that mold. The closer you get to your picks, you really start to hammer in. So, for example, you're picking 10, and you get, and we get to 7, and, you really know your board, the six guys are off the board, you're getting ready to look at 7, you're saying, okay, guys, this is where we're at, this is what we're looking at, and, this is where we have them, this is what we want to do, any last-minute objections, any last-minute thoughts, everybody good with it, we're going to go with, player so-and-so. And you go through it, and if he's not there, then this is what we're going to do. And you kind of, as the seventh pick goes in, guy's still there, you're still going, you still got your plan. You play pick 8. By that time, you get to pick 8, and you're on a clock at 10, you're starting getting calls. So you start to look at it. And what you do is, if you got your guy that's still on the board that you're comfortable taking, what you do is you say, yeah, we might be where are you? Where do you want to, where are you now? Okay, look, you're at 18. Okay, well, we might be willing to do it. It really depends upon our guys there. What are you guys thinking in terms of moving up, in terms of what you're offering? Let me look at it, and you know they'll say what they think. You make a note of it, and then you go back and say, you know, give us a call when we're on the clock. If our guys, you know, if our guys are not there, we'll talk. And then you hang up, and you may get three or four of those calls, and you deal with it. You chart them all down. So you better be prepared, because let's say you've got, you know, only one or two guys left, and all of a sudden they go at eight. They're picked at 8 and 9. So now you're there at 10, and you got to redirect. The, you know, guy you wanted is now off the board. Well, first of all, let's go to the scenario. The guy you got that is on the board, and you're really excited about him, you know, there's really not a whole lot you're going to do in terms of moving out of that pick. You just are going to be comfortable. You're really good with the guy you want. But let's just say the guy you really had targeted is gone, and maybe two are gone. Now you're sitting there, and you've got some guys that you can take. You better be prepared to take. And at that point, you say, hey, look, guys, we can go down. We got some offers. We can go down to 18. We can go down to 16. We can go down to 22. This is what they're offering. This is what we're asked for. This is what's value if we move down. Okay, here's how it works. We can have player X, or we can move down and get one of these guys at 18, and then with the two other picks that we're going to get for the, making this move, we could get this guy. So is the value better for these three guys or this one guy? Okay, that's fine. And you go with that. With that idea. Now you get on the phone with the team and say, yeah, you know, we'd be willing to do it, but instead of your third and your fifth, we're going to need your third and your fourth. And then you kind of haggle from there. You go with it. You don't have a lot of time, but you sit there and you let them on a spot. They really want it. They'll move up. Well, we can't move that. I tell you what we'll do. If you give me your fourth, we'll trade spots with you in the six. So we'll allow you to come back, and you can pick eight spots higher in the sixth round. And, you know, what we need is your fourth. And then try to sweeten it, try to get it done, move it down. You got a deal done. You send it into the league. It's done. Once it's into the league, you can, you know, it doesn't matter if they announce it on TV yet. That clock is unofficial. It's whether something has been in the league, and often they're on the phone and they've got it, but they haven't really announced it yet, and that's fine. So you go through that process, and that's where it goes. Now, this again heats up the closer you get to that process. It takes a little luck too. You can plot out all the strategy you want, but much like in a game where the ball bounces funny things can happen that they're sometimes out of your control. You just have to be meticulously prepared for every possible scenario. A game plan for the draft is just like for a game. There's no substitution for hard work and preparation. The teams that are successful setting up their board with good scouting evaluation and information gathering, the teams that do that the best, the ones that win. Once you do that, once you complete that process of setting up your draft board, you need to let your draft board dictate to you what you do on draft day. If you start to talk to your draft board and don't let the draft board talk to you, you're going to be in trouble. In scouting, it's really about doing your work properly and listening to the people who do the work. No one's perfect, but fewer mistakes are made when you put more emphasis on the guys working on the craft all year long. The draft, you know, may take place over a three-day period over a weekend, but it's the culmination of a two-year effort of evaluating these guys. So that's where you want to put your stock in your evaluations, not amateur evaluations. And professional evaluators make mistakes, but you still want people that are qualified. Now, I did mention that today, in the world of the NFL, you have more people that are not from a football background, meaning they haven't coached or scouted. That's what I mean by football people. You know, players, that's great, but, you know, playing, we've all played it, but coaching it and scouting it has taken it to a different level of understanding of the game. Those who haven't done that, to me, their opinions are not that valuable, but they've got a lot of those people now that are running teams, and how well they're able to listen to the people that are their football people are really pivotal. And trusting those guys to set up the board correctly. And some do it well. The Eagles with Howie Roseman, not a football guy, has done a good job of listening to his people. Other people have not done a very good job at times. They've been a little too risky, been a little too aggressive. Now listen, you own the team, you run the team, you run it the way you want to. In fact, having a lot of non-football people has helped me in my consulting work because they tend to lean on more football people for football acumen on scouting and coaching and evaluation of those two elements. But I can tell you that the guys that are the most comfortable are the football guys, the guy dyed-in-the-wool football guys that have scouted and coached for years. They know these players like the back of their hand. They don't worry about that everybody else thinks Alvin Kamara is a third-round player. If you think he's a first-round player, you stick to your guns. A guy who's not a football guy, that's not coached and scouted for a living, and just are looking at this from, you know, less than a professional viewpoint, they tend to listen to more scuttlebutt. Not necessarily from the media, but they tend to listen to other people they talk to in the league. You know, the other teams, I've talked to five other teams, and they got this guy a lot higher than we do. They got this guy a lot lower than we do. And they start to question that. What do they know that we don't know? And again, when you are not from a football background, you don't have the confidence in yourself because you don't really know. But football people say, hey, you know, I know what this guy is, and I'm not really concerned about what somebody else has him, because at the end of the day, it really comes down to, but if you've been there, if you've done it, I think that it is really important to understand that, you know, you trust your judgments in what you have. Okay, I'm going to get into some of the draft latest, but I want to answer these questions first. We're going to dig down into some of the minutiae and the depth of the draft in certain spots. Somebody's asking a question that he heard a story on some other media outlet about a team that realized that a player, they didn't realize a player could fall to their pick, but they thought it was unlikely, so unlikely that it would fall, that they had minimal preparation and investigation for that player. I don't know if that's as true. I don't know the story. But to Peter, who sent that in, first of all, it is beyond ridiculous if they don't have their full data and information on the player. And by data, I mean everything. Thorough medical, thorough character. And the football part, to me, is easy. You've evaluated him. You've got that information. And you've done your homework on him. There's absolutely no excuse to not be prepared for anybody. I would never draft or sign anyone as an undrafted free agent unless I had a full dossier on them. So there's not a player in this draft that I would consider that I haven't done the work on. So there's no such thing as I didn't think he was going to be there. If I'm sitting there and I'm 32, okay, and this is how serious this is, if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm going to know everything about every one of these quarterbacks in this draft. It doesn't matter that I'm not taking a quarterback. It doesn't matter that none of those quarterbacks are going to be there at 32. You have to do your homework. You have to do your homework on everyone. I think the comparative measures help you. It helps you down the road when you are evaluating a quarterback. Let's say, you know, years down the road. It helps you if the possibility that you may need to be, you may want to, what if one of these guys get released in 2 years? You may want to sign him as a backup if Nick Foles moves on. You have to be prepared. So to me, that would be embarrassing if anybody didn't have their full information. The other question that was asked is, have you ever received a last-minute panic telephone call about a player asking about a player from a team asking for your evaluation? And if so, how common is this? The only thing that happens, and certainly – the conversation should never be at this stage, you think this guy can play? You think this guy is better than who we have? You think this guy is better than that guy? Well, you already should know that. You should never have that conversation. The only thing you should that should ever come up is something that happened a couple of years ago with Lyle Collins. If you remember Lyle Collins of LSU, really good player, talented guy, unfortunate situation. His ex-girlfriend was murdered about a week, maybe 4 or 5 days prior to the draft. He was never a suspect, and he was never involved. But he was questioned because he was, you know, an ex-boyfriend, and obviously that's how criminologists do their work. That caused a free-for-all in the league. I had more panic calls then, and I didn't have the answer. I mean, how the hell am I going to? And I know Lyle Collins really well. It's from Baton Rouge, and there's no way I'm going to know, you know, whether he was involved or not. Did I think he would be? Well, of course not, you know. But you don't know that. You don't know what's going on in your neighbor's house. I mean, you just don't know. You don't know what goes on behind closed doors. So, you know, the only thing you do in that situation is be honest. Listen, that's not been the type of kid. I would be shocked. I would be, first of all, wouldn't you be shocked about anybody killing anybody? I mean, you don't ever expect anybody to be a killer. I mean, you don't ever, it just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't come out that way that you think this guy is a killer. But there's some people that you think are shady and they would be involved in stuff. And you're honest and say, he looks at his background, I know nothing about it, make a couple calls for you, but you know, this is the background. He's not been involved with any type of that stuff in the past. He has been involved with that type of stuff in the past, yada, 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 whatever. But the evaluations, it's a little too late to try to get into panic evaluations. But there are a couple of things that come up. Medical rumors and character rumors. And sometimes things happen late. And that's what scares you. In fact, when a guy that you've got high drops, you immediately say, what's wrong with this guy? There's something that other people know that we don't know. There's some medical information, and you go back. And you, I mean, yeah, that's where you get a little nervous, because here's the thing. Medical and character are information. Those are things you've met with them, you know them, but you don't know if he's got involved in something, you know, last night or last week that you just hasn't been uncovered. Maybe somebody else uncovered it. You're trying to figure it out. Yeah, that bothers you because that's information, that's intel, and that's something that you've got to know, but sometimes you just don't know and it scares you off. So, you know, Lyle Collins is one. The other circumstances were some guys that you pretty much can anticipate because they either had some past character issues or medical issues that clearly just people might have disagreed on in terms of how serious it was. But not a lot of last-minute panic calls. A lot of, you know, again, at this stage, if you're trying to decide between this player or that player, you've already done that. You should have already done that. Also, another question, it's about Alabama prospects and Minkah Fitzpatrick and, you know, the question about Alabama secondary players becoming not very effective, and that's really not true. You know, there are a lot of good ones. I think you've seen a couple of the big ones, like Mark Barron's, not be successful because they were built more like linebackers to defend the run. As the spread game is affected, even in the SEC, Alabama's done a really good job with their defensive backs. And if you look at their defensive backs in the league, you know, I hear that they're not good. They're all pretty good. I mean, they really are good. So here's what you get with Alabama defensive backs. They are as well prepared as any defensive back in the NFL. They are really, really good. And from a technique standpoint, an effort standpoint, an assignment standpoint. And so if one thing I would say is they're a little bit maxed out. They tend to play better maybe than they test. But I disagree that I think that's a media myth, And, you know, everyone said, well, what about so-and-so? Well, that has nothing to do with the school. That has to do with the player. You know, it's just like saying their running backs are not very good. Well, you know, Richardson was a guy that Trent got in. He just couldn't deal with the social life and his family and all that. And he was, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with another player. I think that is very much a myth. Minkah Fitzpatrick is a slot corner, first of all. He is not an outside corner. He can play there, but that's not where his strength is. I think he is a free safety. He's a strong safety. He's a slot corner. He's got great value. I think he's one of the better players in the draft. So don't get caught up in the myth about what is what. All right, latest news and information. I believe that the Browns are going to pick one. I've said I would take Sam Darnold. I think they've got their quarterback in mind. I think I know what they're going to do, but I don't know for certain. There's a lot of speculation. We'll see tomorrow night. I think the Giants have a plan A and plan B, depending on who's there at two. But I think it may come down to I think I would be surprised if it's if Sam Darnold's on the board, then it's but I think it'd likely be between Darnold, Barkley, or Chubb, Nick Chubb. Three, I would expect the Jets to take a quarterback. It certainly would be Darnold if he were there. I would expect Mayfield to be the guy if he's not. At four, I would expect the Browns, if they get their quarterback at one, to have Barkley and Chubb, whoever is remaining available there. And then this is where it gets interesting at five, and where I think Denver is definitely intrigued by moving out. But how far down will take them out of a certain caliber of player. The Browns are definitely shopping that number four pick. So if they don't stay there and take it, I think that they can get a guy like Barkley and Chubb, and that's more value than getting extra picks. But we'll see what they can get and how far they need to move down. They could certainly maximize and even get more value. So there's no doubt that the Browns lead this draft in terms of ammunition of what they can do. The Bills are definitely trying to trade up, and it's for a quarterback, and we'll see if Rosen or Mayfield slips, how that might take them, how far they would go, and what they would be willing to give. The Cardinals, same thing, would have to offer even a little more. The Packers have been aggressively trying to move up. I do believe that they've got an impact defensive player in mind, like a Minkah Fitzpatrick, maybe a Derwin James, maybe a Denzel Ward. But I think that they definitely want to make a move there. There are some really interesting conversations going on with teams about, you know, who they might be interested in and whatnot, in terms of how they view players and see players. I think that the quarterbacks are intriguing in that you get more and more coaches that are concerned about coaching Josh Rosen. You've got some are not bothered, some are. Some love Lamar Jackson, some have no interest in Lamar Jackson. Then you've got others that I, frankly, when I hear them talk about certain players privately, to me, I think they're just trying to talk their way out of something and hoping I repeat something. So a lot of that I don't pay much attention to. Look for the Niners to target a defensive guy, maybe Tremaine Edmonds at nine. Let me say this, folks. The top of the draft, ironically, is you got guys, you know the quarterbacks, but I think the best players, Barkley, Nelson. So, you know, with Barkley and Nelson being at the top, along with the quarterbacks, which is how they're going to come off the board, the rest of the players are defensive-oriented. They're defensive players. The Chubbs and the Fitzpatricks and the Davenports and the Edmonds and Roquan Smith and Rashawn Evans and Derwin James and Denzel Ward and Mike Hughes and, you know, on and on. You've got a real defensive heavy. So I think you're going to see that's where the it's going to be quarterbacks and it's going to be defensive guys and a couple of playmakers, you know, like Nelson, excuse me, like Barkley, and then a great, you know, player in Nelson that's going to be really high. So I think the top of the draft is shaping up as expected. Maurice Hurst is definitely looks like going to drop out of the first round due to the medicals on most people. Even the people that are not as concerned about him medically, I think you're going to see that have an effect on where they would take him. But I want to spend some time because everyone loves the first round. And while that's going to be exciting, I think the one thing at the top of the draft, we've covered that enough. As you get into the middle of the first round, late first round, you're looking at, and particularly if you're a member of LandryFootball.com, you look at those early second round grades and even the mid second round grades. You're going to have a number of those guys that go in the first round because that's where the next group of players are. That's going to be key. So I think you're going to see some value, like a Harold Landry of Boston College, a Sam Hubbard of Ohio State. You'll start to see the receivers go in the first round. You know, you'll see Ridley go pretty high. I think you're going to see Lorenzo Carter and a Leighton Vander Esch go in the first round. Josh Jackson of Iowa, very underrated player. You're probably going to see Mike McGlinchey of Notre Dame, the tackle, the teammate of Quentin Nelson, go in the first round. Likely Colton Miller, Taven Bryan of Florida. So Jair Alexander of Louisville is another one. James Daniel, I think the best center in this draft out of Iowa. Sonny Michel is going to go in that late first round with a high second round grade. Hayden Hurst, the tight end at South Carolina, you're going to see him. And I tell you a guy that I've loved, and you know what? I've said it. I think he's the second best guard in this draft. But I like him even more the more I've studied him is Isaiah Wynn of Georgia. I think he's a guy that could get there in the first round. I think he's a Pro Bowl caliber guard waiting to happen. And I'm telling you, the more and more I study him, he would not embarrass you at tackle. So we'll see Will Hernandez of UTEP go. Mason Rudolph, a mid to late second round value, gone in the first round, no question. Dante Pettis of Washington's got some value. DJ Moore, some people are higher on him than I have him. I have as a mid-second round value. He's likely going to go in the first round. Deshaun Hanna is going to go. Terrell Crosby's really intriguing. Brian O'Neill is a name to remember. That is a left tackle. He has some value. High second round at the latest. Wouldn't shock me if he went in the first. Where will Orlando Brown go is going to be really key. Tim Settle, defensive tackle of Virginia Tech, another intriguing player. Mark Andrews, not much of a blocker, but is a really athletic tight end that could stretch the field. Really good player. Isaiah Oliver is a corner that may go a little bit higher. Frank Ragnow of Arkansas, you're looking at interior offensive lineman, really good center, can play guard. That versatility is going to move him up. Likely late first round, early second round. So some names to remember that are going to be a factor and are going to go higher. Again, my draft boards are draft boards on how they grade out, not projecting where they're going to go because you have to look at the numbers to determine that those guys are going to be really players. But what about when we get into Friday night? What about when we get into Saturday? As you get into some third round value and some of them are going to end up in the second round, this is where you can start to see a couple of receivers like DJ Chark of LSU, Anthony Miller of Memphis, Deion Kane of Clemson, Deshaun Hamilton of Penn State start to go and have an impact. You're going to see a little bit of run on some defensive guys, Jalen Holmes of Ohio State and Taquan Lewis, his teammate, both defensive ends, Josh Sweat out of Florida State. Edge rush guys. We'll start to see some value with the running backs. We're going to see Geis go behind Barkley and, you know, in the first round. Ronald Jones with the injury issues may not go into the second. You're going to see guys like Key, then I think Rashad Penny, Royce Freeman, really good value if they were the last of the top of the third, but likely go in the second. Receivers. This is where I think he gets some value with the Michael Gallup and a Jordan Lashley and a Simi Cobbs of Indiana. Mike Gesicki is a guy that I like, but I don't think his first-round caliber, but you're going to have to take him in the second round. B.J. Hill is another guy that is, to me, if you're going to reach in the second round, not in the first for a guy like that, not a big fan of that type of a move. Martinez Rankin of Mississippi State, a big tackle that there's a name to remember that's good value there. I think that when you get into this third-round value, I think you start to look at Josie Jewell of Iowa, a linebacker that's a playmaker. A Quinn Blanding of Virginia, free safety that I think can really be a good player. Sean Welsh, a guard from Iowa, has got some value there. Nathan Shepard, a raw-bone kid out of Fort Hays State in Kansas, a defensive tackle. Really good player. Trenton Thompson, I think, has value there as well at Georgia. You get into that Saturday group. It's going to be interesting to see where Luke Falk of Washington State goes, how high he goes, the quarterback there. Kalen Ballage of the running back of Arizona State, Mark Walton, the running back of Miami, good players that I think would be great value at the top of Saturday if they're still on the board. I think there's a couple of players that may not last to the fourth round, because the numbers are going to put them in the third, but Duke Ilafor of Wake Forest and Breland Speaks of Ole Miss, two defensive ends that I think can be really good players. Hercules Matafa'a of Washington State and Chad Thomas of Miami, two others to keep in mind. Another project guy, Alex Kappa, who can be a good right tackle at the next level at Humboldt State. I would stick with him in the fourth round. I would not take him any higher, but I think he's got really good value there. Jamarco Jones of Ohio State, Desmond Harrison of West Georgia, two other good, and Brendan Parker of North Carolina A&T are all good defensive tackle prospects that I think can be really good. A guy that will likely drop and drop a lot is Antonio Callaway, the receiver from Florida, so don't expect to see him go, if at all. It'll be late on Saturday as his drug tests and his problems are a concern. Jamon Moore's got some character issues that have been a question, but he's a talented receiver. Deontay Burnett out of USC, Trey Quinn of SMU, Alan Lazard of Iowa State, all really good players that I think represent good value somewhere in that third round. Kentavious Street out of North Carolina State, the defensive tackle I love in the fourth round value. To me, Justin Jones of North Carolina State and Tavarius McFadden of Florida State are corners that I think represent really good fourth-round value there. Remember this. Quarterbacks are going to be overvalued, okay? Pass rushers, big guys are going to be overvalued. Defensive ends, defensive tackles, offensive tackles, overvalued. Running backs, devalued because they're more plentiful. Not enough big guys, plenty of running backs and receivers. Not the top quality ones, but just in terms of guys that are pretty good. So when you're looking at that third round, you start to see a run on them, people get a little nervous. We better take our defensive tackle here. We better take our defensive end here. We better take our tackle or guard here. We can get a receiver later. And that's how the draft goes. But Armani Watts is a guy in Jordan Whitehead. Are two guys that I would recommend you keep an eye out on as free safeties that would be really good value into the fourth round. I also like Darius Leonard as an edge rusher, as a stand-up outside backer from South Carolina State. Shaquem Griffin, who's been much talked about, he's more than just a great story. I'd love to get him in the fourth round. I think he's got good value, as does Jeff Holland of Auburn, who I think his best football's ahead of him. I think there's some tight ends that you can get into the fourth round. Ian Thomas of Indiana, Troy Fumagalli of Wisconsin, Will Disley of Washington, I think are all guys that can be really good players. You're looking for a special teams guy, Daniel Carlson is a guy that certainly I think could help you, and I would not consider it earlier than the fourth round, but you'd absolutely have to do it. Some guys that have value at each position, down into this draft, I think Kyle Loletta of Richmond, Mike White of Western Kentucky, and Luke Falk of Washington State, who I've already mentioned, and Kurt Benkirk of Virginia, would be more Loletta and White third-round value and Falk fourth-round value. Riley Ferguson of Memphis is somebody that I would like, along with Kyle Allen, to bring in as a late-round pick at that position. I mentioned the running backs. As you get into that fourth round, I mentioned some of the key guys, but you get into the fifth round, guys like Chase Edmonds of Fordham, Darrell Williams of LSU, Justin Jackson of Northwestern, Cam Petway of Auburn, Rock Thomas of Jacksonville State have some value. Philip Lindsay of Colorado, Jordan Wilkinson of Ole Miss, and Chris Warren of Texas, and Javon Franklin of Western Michigan, and Quentin Flowers of South Florida, I think have really good value in the late round. You're looking at some fullbacks, not a heavy position, but boy, I tell you, I would love to get my hand on Nick Baldwin of San Diego State and Dimitri Flowers of Oklahoma, one of those guys, if I'm looking for a fullback. Those guys really intrigue me and I think have good value into the fifth round. Receivers, we talked about it, get you into the fourth round. You've got some guys there that we've talked about. In the fifth and sixth round, guys to keep an eye out on for is Cedric Wilson of Boise State, Javon Wims of Georgia, Jaleel Scott of New Mexico State, Darren Carrington of Utah. Those guys, Byron Pringle of Kansas State, even later, all have really good value. Jester Wee of Pittsburgh, Ray McLeod of Syracuse, Braxton Berrios of Miami, Robert Foster of Alabama. Guys like that, I think, have some value late that could at least come in and compete and maybe be your fourth or fifth receiver on your team. I've gone through the fourth round of tight ends. How about guys a little bit later? How about Tyler Conklin of Central Michigan, Durham Smythe of Notre Dame, David Wells of San Diego State, Dalton Schultz of Stanford have some good value there late into this round, late into this draft. Offensive tackles, again, these guys are going to be overvalued. So when I give you some fifth, sixth round guys, these may go into the fourth, like Joseph Noteboom of TCU, Zach Crabtree of Oklahoma State, Will Richardson of NC State, and Toby Weathersby of LSU, and KC McDermott of Miami, Greg Sinatra of Wagner, Brett Toth of Auburn, of Army, rather, has got a commitment. He's got to work into it, but he's got a chance. Brett Kendrick of Tennessee and Jared Jones of Pittsburgh and David Bright of Stanford and Jeremy Irvin of Colorado all represent great late-round value at offensive tackle. As far as the offensive guards, getting into the late-round possibilities, I look at guys like Sam Jones of Arizona State, Tony Adams of NC State, Jamal Demby of Maine is an intriguing guy, Nick Gates of Nebraska, Tamon Paris of Stony Brook College, Mahi Tiahama out of Southeast Louisiana, Selassie Utufaha of Utah are all guys, and Tyrone Crowder of Clemson and Matt Pryor of TCU that have some value at guard later in this draft, late round. Looking for a late round center, I got some for you there. How about Jake Bennett of Colorado State? How about Brian Allen of Michigan State? Scott Quisenberry of UCLA? Brazley Bozeman of Alabama? I think Will Clapp could be good value into the fifth round if you could get him there. I've got a fourth round grade on him. Those guys, really good value. Defensive tackle. These guys are going to be tough to find late. You're going to have to overplay your hand a little bit with them to get them. But I think guys like Kendrick Norton of Miami, Justin Jones of NC State, Kentavious Street of North Carolina State, John Atkins of Georgia, James Looney of California, Bilal Nichols of Delaware is an intriguing guy. P.J. Hall of Sam Houston, an intriguing guy late. I would bring Christian Locatour from LSU and Greg Gilmore from LSU into camp, as I would Jamius Pittman of Central Florida, as well as Lowell Lutulele out of Utah, Joshua Fraser of Alabama. Some guys that I would consider in, you know, into the sixth round and seventh round if still available. Defensive ends, again, hard to find those guys late. But how about Kyle Fitz of Utah? Duke, I mentioned Duke Ellifor and Breland Speaks of Wake Forest and Ole Miss, respectively. But Eddie Aruna of Tulane. Osalami Inawani of Toledo. Justin Lawler of SMU. Dorian Armstrong of Kansas. Kyle Fitz of Utah. Good value. Demetrius Cooper of Michigan State. Joel Ostman of Central Michigan. All have some really good value there as well. Linebackers that I would look at late. Ski Moore of South Carolina, Orion Burks of Vanderbilt, Trey Williams of Auburn, John Deion Hamilton of Alabama, Marquise Haynes of Ole Miss, Dorian O'Daniel of Clemson, Leon Jacobs of Wisconsin, Mike McCurry of Michigan, Davin Bellamy of Georgia, Garrett Dooley of Wisconsin, Jack Siski of Wisconsin, guys that I think have really good value late, good special teams guy that I think could be reserve linebackers for your team. Safeties, guys that I think have some value late. Treyon Henderson of Hawaii, Saron Neal of Jacksonville State, Troy Apke of Penn State, Trey Flowers of Oklahoma State, Kazir White of West Virginia, Damon Webb of Ohio State, Sean Chandler of Temple, Nick Orr of TCU, guys like that that I think Trey Matthews of Auburn is a good in-the-box guy, as is Marcel Harris, Trey Morris of Florida State. Corner, late-round value guys to keep an eye out for, Avante Maddox of Pitt, Levi Wallace of Alabama, Devontae Harris of Illinois State, like Cameron Kelly of San Diego State, J.C. Jackson of Maryland, Darius Phillips of Western Michigan, Grant Haley of Penn State, Teron Johnson of Weber State. Those are some guys that I think have real good value. And let's not forget the specialists. If you're looking at specialists that are going to be taken late, I mentioned Daniel Carson of Auburn. I think he's got really good value. I wouldn't pull the trigger until the fourth round. Eddie Pinero of Florida. Michael Dixon, the punter from Texas, really good. J.K. Scott, a left-footed punter from Alabama. Johnny Townsend, the punter from Florida. Joseph Davison, the punter at Bowling Green. Shane Trapuka, the punter from Texas A&M. The Pitt punter, Ryan Winslow. The Tennessee punter, Trevor Daniel. Those are all guys that I would consider signing late. There's a punter from Incarnate Word that I think is worthy of being in a camp. I like the long snapper from Oregon, Tanner Carew, that I would definitely sign. Ryan Anderson, the punter of Rutgers, I would sign as an undrafted free agent, as I would Griffin Oaks, the place kicker from Indiana, and Drew Brown, the place kicker at Nebraska. We've run through a lot of names for you, but I wanted to give you a feel for not just what's going to happen on Thursday night, but what could happen on Friday night, what could happen on Saturday during the day. Some names to keep an eye out on. Of course, for much more detail, got to go to LandryFootball.com. Check out all the scouting reports on all these players, thumbnails on what they are, how they match up, and how they stack up on the board. So you really can see what your team's value is. That's what we've got it for. And reminder again, we'll be at LandryFootball.com breaking down the information for you, having all the latest analysis at LandryFootball.com. You can catch me on NBC Sports Radio live for at least a couple of hours breaking down the draft. And, of course, we'll have all the results and recaps for you in the days and weeks ahead. So we appreciate you joining us. We hope you enjoyed this draft day edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Enjoy the draft in any way you choose to do it. Remember, focus on the players, not mock drafts, in terms of how your team did. Enjoy it. Send me your thoughts, comments. We'll address them here, and we'll recap a lot of this for you on Tuesday on the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com. We'll see you then.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Jim Fannin Show quick fix on Radio Influence.
Let's talk to Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox.
I think the whole college experience made it to grow up as a young man. If I wanted to, when I accomplish things in life, as you know, we lost our dad. I lost my dad at a young age.
Right.
You know, very close to my mom, very close to my sisters. Joey was playing. Always looking up to him, but he wasn't around most of the time. So I needed to you know, explore life, you know, by myself. And going to Miami, I was able to accomplish that 3 years. That honestly, without going to college, no way I'm talking to you right now about my experiences. I grew up so much, connected with a lot of people, and learned about my craft. And those 3 years, 94, 95, 96, I'll never forget.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.